I'm watching Seinfeld, and I'm like, he does great of those. How can I do those if I'm going to be a comedian or a writer? I don't even know how to write. Or a storyteller. I don't even know how to do stories that funny. Only the Snow White one. Seinfeld! He does really good jokes, and I can't do that much jokes because nobody laughs at me. And I need someone to tweet me. We need to copy him, you need to print it off so I can do each word at a time when I and I need to memorize that so I can do each word at a time. He does great of those. How can I do those if I'm going to be a comedian or a writer? I don't even know how to write.
TBTL!
I love these guys. They make funny with their mouths.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm not eating at Taco John's. That's spicy stuff.
I think the awkward silences are the best bits, and especially those kind of related to the obvious sexual tension between Luke and Andrew. And I think that's a really important thing that you need to keep in the show.
If there's a better use for the internet, I haven't found it.
Well, hello and good morning. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
If only we were trapped in a castle in the middle of winter with nowhere to go.
Sort of. We're trapped in an attic at 7th and Cedar, coming to you from the home offices of American Public Media and Studio P, which stands for Premium Podcast Programming. Probably. My name is Luke Burbank, by the way. I'm your host.
Hello, everyone.
So excited to be here doing the show, even though we had a we had a minor incident right before the show began. The collapse of a broadcast table, which just sent coffee and equipment everywhere.
It was literally a major disaster.
But I'm trying to just put that out of my mind because I was in high spirits. High spirits today, really ready to do this show, and I'm not going to let one little collapse of a table dampen my excitement here for episode 2885 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
We've got another edition of Minnesota.
Noise!
We have a growing list of stories from right here in the Twin Cities. We didn't get to this yesterday, but we will tell you about the radio station that's opening in a haberdashery. Sounds like the kind of place Andrew and I would like to really finish our careers, or in fact start our careers as soon as APM gets wise to TBTL and fires us. We may be moving over to this haberdashery just down the road here in St. Paul. Also, the house that was the backdrop for one of the characters in the movie Grumpy Old Men.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
And Grumpier Old Men. That house is for sale here in St. Paul. And it turns out there was a real-life grumpy old man living there who did not want to let the movie The Holly Weirdos take over his home and use it for their film. But eventually he did. And there's some dazzling details in the story of this house here in St. Paul. So we'll get into that, too. Oh, and speaking of news...
I've got lots of news.
I've got some news involving my legal status when it comes to my passport, my name... And whether or not I'll be allowed to leave the country and go to Australia at the end of May for TBTL-a-thon 10 from the Lobster to Larima. That will happen also during Top Stories. Before all that, though, we got to say hi to this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's the Miami meat tent. He's doing the work. And he just wants to make sure, even though I'm the bad boy of public radio, people know that he also has a dangerous side.
I stole a considerable number of books from the Citadel Library.
His name is Andrew Welsh, and he joins me right now from the one table that hasn't collapsed yet here in Studio P. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. I don't like the fact that you said yet. I was feeling all good and secure, like we fixed a problem, and now suddenly I feel like I am on a, I don't know, what is the expression, a tower of cards here?
Sure, you're...
A table of cards, a house, card table, mm-hmm. A house of cards.
Right. An Uno level 10?
Yeah. I'm on a House of Phase 10 right now.
Phase 10. I'll get that. Someday I'm going to learn that you're not from Valley Center, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And also that it's not Uno to the power of 10 or whatever I call it.
Do you want to hear a quick little factoid about Phase 10, the Uno game?
Absolutely. Well, now, wait a minute, though.
Okay.
Is it a factoid or is it?
Oh, good point. This is a real fact. This is a real fact from my life. This is non-intelligence for your life.
Oh, okay. Avoid the toid, I think is what we've always said. Right.
Avoid the toid. Are you writing that down as a show title?
I'm playing
intelligence for your life.
First I'm playing that. Now okay. I'm writing down avoid the toid.
Avoid the toid. Got there early. This is such a dumb story. But on a whim, right before I left for my airplane ride out here to St. Paul, I decided, you know what would be a fun airplane game in case I get sick of reading my book. I purposely didn't download any TV or movies onto my iPad device because I wanted to read the Bill Bryson book. And I figured, like, I get good reading done. And I'm just too easily distracted. And if I have, like, a TV show on my thing, I'll start watching it. So I'm glad I made that decision. But I thought, well, in case, you know, I want a little distraction up there, why don't I download a game that I can play without needing the internet, right? Because I love Hearthstone, but you need the internet to play Hearthstone and a lot of games. And I will say, they're taking a lot of these very otherwise simple games that you could play on your machine without the internet, and they're making them internet dependent now. And so I downloaded Phase 10. I'm like, that's a nice simple game I can play against the computer. I get 30,000 feet in the sky. Is that about, what's cruising altitude, 20?
I think 25 to 30 25 is kind of usual.
And so I'm in that range. I don't know for sure. I can look at the logs. Anyway, I go to open up my Phase 10. Doesn't work. Won't load. No internet.
What?
I don't know. Like, they make everything internet these days.
Are there in-app purchases for Uno Force Majeure?
That's the thing. I think it was a free app. Force Majeure.
Insurance will not cover what happens during this Uno game.
God, did you ever see that movie Force Majeure, by the way?
No.
I heard it was really amazing. I think I'm thinking of the right movie. There's a family. I'm telling this third hand. This is a movie I have not seen that somebody told me about the opening scene of 4 or 5 years ago. But apparently it's like a family dining somewhere. I can't remember what country they're in. And a giant tidal wave comes to, like, I think, and it's clearly bearing down and it's going to kill everybody. And I think the husband / father of the family just, like, abandons his family to save himself, except nobody dies. And the rest of the movie, I think. I could be totally wrong.
I'm just looking at some stills. It looks like maybe it's an avalanche.
Is it an avalanche? And then they have to deal with a family. Like, how do we repair this when we know that he abandons us?
A man's selfish reaction to the danger posed by an avalanche causes cracks in his marriage and relationships with his children. That is such a genius idea for a movie.
Yes.
Only, by the way, this movie appears to be a Norwegian film, I believe.
Okay.
Only one of those Scandinavian countries would come up with. In America, this would star The Rock, and he would save his family from the avalanche.
And the avalanche would be like the peak. That's the thing that you're building towards.
Right. But Tommy Lee Jones would play the voice of the avalanche.
You say, "I didn't crush my wife."
Yes, exactly.
I don't care.
Yeah.
My favorite line from The Fugitive. Jeff and I always try to make each other laugh by doing our Tommy Lee Jones imitation. It's like, I don't care. He just says it in such an unaffected way. Anyway, so that is a movie that I remembered some details of that Madeline Brand told me about 4 or 5 years ago. It is an avalanche, not a tidal wave, but still, good idea for a movie.
You know, it's still a huge wall of water that is very dangerous.
It's a wall of something. Yeah.
No, but I mean, it's just frozen water in one case and an unfrozen water in the other. So, I mean, I think it's pretty – you were really close. You didn't say it was a flock of seagulls.
You know,
that's
though,
a totally different thing.
I mean, I appreciate you trying to save me here, but I always think of avalanches as dirt and rocks. I mean, those can be avalanches too, right? Do they have to be frozen?
Well, I think you're talking about a landslide.
Oh, my God. I didn't think there was a difference.
Sure.
I really
did.
Well,
one is a sweet, sweet ditty by Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Although I learned about it because of the Smashing Pumpkins
me
cover.
Me too. That was on their like collection of B-sides and stuff. I can't think of the name of it. It had that cool cover.
I was like, oh my God, Billy Corgan, you've written the perfect song.
There's a Thin Lizzy song on there, too, that's really good. I was
really?
Like, this is great. Then it's like, oh, it's Thin Lizzy. Ever since I heard that song, I've been meaning to listen to more Thin Lizzy. I still haven't gotten to it. It's been 25 years.
Thick Lizzy is the new Thin Lizzy. I don't know if you've been on. You're not allowed to use thick, T-H-I-double-C. You're not allowed to use that word because it's too modern for you. But speaking of experiences out in the world of nature, Andrew, I told you I came in today before the great table collapse. I came in just feeling...
Is it a table slide or an avalanche or a table lanche?
Well, it's covered in coffee now, so what does that mean? What category does that put it in? The morning got off to a nice start for me. It's beautiful but cold here in St. Paul. Just sunny skies, blue skies. It's beautiful out. It was also 32 degrees when I decided to go for my little jog this morning along the Mississippi River. Come on.
Which is rising, I hear.
It's rising
to dangerous levels.
Well, I mean, where I was, it was still just fine, but it was definitely, you could see there was chunks of ice and snow in it.
Oh, wow.
Just moving. It was just beautiful and serene and a little threatening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like me after I've had a few drinks. Like, it's very wide, as you may have heard about the Mississippi, but it just was this sort of amazing, beautiful, you know, kind of piece of nature, I guess. And I'm jogging along the side of the river. I'm on some trail somewhere. I'm in Lilydale Natural Park, kind of across the river from that Schmidt, that decommissioned Schmidt processing plant that's now like a hipster thing we drove by last night with El Ropo.
Yeah.
I like that Steve has just become a totally different person. It's not even like Steve Nelson. He's now just being called a totally different person.
And it's weird because there is a dog that one of our listeners named Steve Nelson. Mm-hmm. So there is still a Steve. There's always a Steve Nelson.
Yes.
But right now it's not a human. It's a dog.
So I'm jogging on this little trail. And Andrew, I just want to warn you, I am not going to do well if we run into a cassowary in Australia.
Did you get scared by a finch?
I got menaced by not one, but two, you call it a herd, flock of turkey.
Oh.
Big, mature, scary turkeys.
Where was I? You know,
by the way,
what?
Threatened by Turkeys is going to be the name of my bluegrass band. I think it could be a big hit.
You know, I was looking for stories the other day, and I came across a story. Oh, you know what? It was in Boston. I saw a headline in Boston, how to deal with all the wild turkeys in Boston. And I said, damn, I wish this was in St. Paul, because that would be a good top story for Minnesota Noise Week.
This was Minnesota.
This is happening.
Not so.
Noise.
That is. So that's crazy. There's just turkeys out there?
I get the sense. I'm sure locals listening to this know all about it. I think I saw one of them had a little ankle tag on. So they must be.
House arrest.
Yeah. If they drink, the ankle bracelet goes off. Although when you talk about a scat device with these birds, it has a totally different connotation. Uh-huh. Although I guess poop from them would technically be called guano. But. So they must, like, I'm sure there's somebody with the Parks Department feeds them. Like, I don't think that they've just randomly popped up and people don't know they're there, because they are huge and they're beautiful and weird and dinosauric and, like, tall. One of them was, I swear to God, like 4 feet tall, Andrew, maybe 3.5 feet tall. It came up to my waist and... Like, so as I, and they were, again, like wild turkeys. First of all, wild turkeys are kind of afraid of humans and I think would be mostly avoiding me. These ones looked like they were in the Macy's parade. Enormous, and with the feathers fanned out. And these were, they looked to be male and female, because some of them had like really weird, like Cthulhu face kind of droopy thing hanging off. And then the other ones didn't. So this seemed to be a male, female. You know, whatever indication. But I get to the first group and I'm like, they're kind of on this road. There's a road, a small road, and then there's a trail. And they're on the road, which I had been on. And I was like, nope. I go down to the trail and I am like looking at them out of the side of my eye the whole time, because if they decide to take me on, there's like five of them. I'm not going to survive that. And I ran like in the grass on the other side of the trail. I just wanted my body language to indicate to them, I come in peace. I'm afraid of you turkeys. And then I keep going on the trail, and then like a mile down, I run into a different herd, and these ones are on the trail. So now I have to go up onto the road. I'm just like being, these turkeys are just messing with me.
I got ran off the road on my bike once by a bunch of, not cranes, not turkeys.
Geese?
Geese, yes. Oh, yeah. When I was in.
How about some meat? You like turkey?
Who you calling turkey?
I got this too. Oh, nothing works on this computer.
actually, that computer might be doing us a favor.
I thought that that's not your favorite. Yeah, I was riding my bike, eighth grade, and living in this new area. And there's a giant reservoir in Medina County, Ohio.
Is that by Valley Center?
It's, you know, Valley City is in Medina County. giant, obviously, body of water, relatively speaking, for a kid on his bike. I don't know, it was like Green Lake size or maybe a little bit smaller. Path all the way around it. And I was riding my mountain bike, my new mountain bike that I loved. I still think about it sometimes. It is kind of fluorescent colors that blended into each other. Not exactly what you'd think of as Andy Walsh style, but I liked it. It made me go fast. I'm riding around, racing around this track, and then I see a bunch of turkeys ahead. I'm sorry, not turkeys, geese ahead of me. And I just figure I can just probably ride around them. You know, they're just birds. No, they started coming at me. There must have been young ones around or something. They start coming at me. I'm like, whoop. And then, so the trail is up here. On one side is rocks and water. You can't go that way. On the other side is a really, really, not dangerous, but steep, let's call it a knoll,
yeah,
right? Kind of a big hill going down. And so suddenly these turkeys kind of ran me down this hill. So then I'm like going down really fast.
So you had to go down the steep hill.
Yes, and they're chasing me, man. They were straight up chasing me. I was like, guys, I'm just trying to get by. I'm not like going after you. Clearly you scared the fat kid. Like,
dude,
aren't you done now?
If the funniest home videos of America have taught us nothing else, it's that geese want to run after people and menace them. And when we react with fear, it will be funny to people watching it later, but it will not be funny in the moment. And I literally, in my mind, Andrew, imagined how dumb I was going to look running in terror from these turkeys.
Right.
Like, I thought of my, I was like, I'm going to, if someone were videotaping this, I will look ridiculous, but the fear is very real.
Yes.
Because these things were huge.
And then a football hit you in the groin,
yeah,
and a baby smashed his face into a piece
of cake.
That
seemed like overkill, yeah.
Yeah, it was a little on the nose, as
so,
you say.
So I don't, I just want you to know that if the cassowaries come for us in Australia, I don't think I'm going to be much help because I was very afraid of these turkeys.
I've been scared by peacocks before, which I always thought peacocks are like beautiful, you know what I mean? They are like a symbol of beauty. They're also a symbol of great broadcasting. I don't know if you know that.
Bong, bong, bong.
Like, you know, you just think of the beautiful, you know, feathers, plumage of the peacock. But we were at, I bet you know this place. There's some sort of a, I don't know if it's a bird sanctuary or like a nice, beautiful public gardens. I can't think of the proper word for it in Pasadena.
Oh, Descanso.
Is that what it's called?
I believe so. Yeah.
What's it like? A discount? Is it a conservative? Not
yeah.
A conservative.
Descanso Gardens up there.
Gardens. Okay. Yeah.
It's up in La Cañada.
And there's some you know, peacocks around. I'm like, oh, this is fun. But they were menacing me, and they were menacing a lot of people. They make that hissing noise. You and I are not ready for the really scary birds
not.
Of this
I've
world.
I've been menaced by peacocks in Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
Oh, really?
Yes.
They just run loose there.
I was like, are these ghosts from the other side? Are they telling me something?
My God.
Is it my time to go? Are they going to drag me down into the crypt?
White walkers. White walker birds.
Oh my gosh. I'm very, very excited to talk Game of Thrones with you during Song of Ice and Spoilers, which will be, we think, coming down this very same podcast feed to you later today. Although we did have a talk with Steve Nelson, not the dog, who said, be careful, because sometimes when you put two podcasts out on the same day and you put them in the same feed, there can be trouble. So if it's a couple days from now and you have not seen A Song of Ice and Spoilers, let us know, because we're trying to monitor the situation. This is all still sort of new to us, but we're very excited to be able to release this sort of content as its own little thing.
Is there a possibility? I mean, I would hate to do this on our second time out. But you and I were talking about our tough schedule today. I mean, is there a chance we tell the listeners that if they don't see it today, it might be coming out tomorrow? Is that a reality that we're facing?
I'm not willing to face that reality.
You're
just like I'm not willing
today?
To face the reality that everybody at Winterfell dies.
Okay. By the way, that's not a spoiler if you haven't seen it yet. That's a prediction. But I
let's try to get it out today.
Let's try to get it out today. It might be a little bit later than usual, so don't freak out if you don't see it immediately.
If I don't knock over any more tables, I think it will really our production schedule should work out okay. That would put a major crimp in our whole situation. Okay, let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll thank some dazzling donors, and we'll do the top stories. Lots of Minnesota noise to talk about, which is exciting. I feel like the Twin Cities, they really deliver on folksy news.
They really do,
This is really the land of folksy news, and we've got some for you coming up. So stay with us. This is TBTL.
Clouds so swift, rain won't lift. Gate won't close, railings froze. Get your mind off winter time. You ain't going nowhere. Ooh-wee, right behind. Tomorrow's the day, a bride's gonna come. Oh, oh, are we gonna fly?
Have you heard this before? Now that you play it, I think I recognize the tune. I'm not super familiar with it, but I love it. It's great. The Birds, you said, right? What's the song?
You Ain't Going Nowhere, written by Bob Dylan. True story.
You know, I don't know if I just looked lost in thought to you for a second, but I was lost in thought. And I think I'm having, like, I think my brain is just now processing what happened to you in the table a half hour ago. I'm not even joking. Like, let's just walk through what actually happened. Because I flew into, like, well, we got to solve this problem mode. And now I'm thinking about all the different things that could have happened and why it didn't happen to me and why it happened to you. Because that doesn't seem like, seems like roles were reversed there. I've been in the studio a little bit doing some production. We have two tables set up. What would you call these? Not card tables, but they're like folding
long
tables.
Folding tables. Long you folding tables. You might have tables. Like a church potluck.
Yes. Or an agnostic potluck.
Absolutely.
I don't want to tell
could
people
be anything.
What kind of
a Quaker friend ceremony,
sure, whatever.
A meeting of the Satanists, whatever your deal is.
But it has to be a potluck.
It has to be, definitely.
Or a temporary recording setup. And so we have two of them in there set up here like an L. And on the one I'm sitting at, has like my computer and has most of the equipment on it and like the audio board and a whole bunch of stuff. Yours is mostly clear. All it had on it was half of a headphone amp.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you hadn't even put out your computer or anything yet. You come in here, you set your computer bag, and it's a leather bag with your...
It's a backpack. It's like a computer, one you can keep a computer in.
You set it on the corner of the table along with your full, is that a 16-ounce
whatever the biggest
coffee,
one they made at the hotel lobby was.
And all of a sudden, you turn your back for a second, I don't know what you're doing, and all of a sudden, everything just comes crashing down. That side of the table,
you know what I was
comes
doing?
Crashing down.
I was going to the door to hang our special sign that says don't come in here, premium podcast programming probably happening.
Or we're cleaning up coffee.
Right. And I take like three steps towards the door and I just hear, I honestly, the first thought that went through my mind, Andrew, was I thought the ceiling had collapsed and I was actually worried for your safety.
You thought that I was trapped. Like you always say, like the best listeners of TBTL are those trapped under a heavy object.
Well, certainly the most dedicated.
Yes.
Like you know, your mind tries to, when you hear a weird noise, an unexpected noise, your mind tries to put it into some kind of like logical mm-hmm. framework. And somehow in that moment when I heard that collapse, the last thing that occurred to me was, oh, the table I just put my stuff on is it just, and it's one of those folding tables where obviously you fold the legs out. And what had happened was the person who nicely set up this room for us, or somebody, that's I'm assuming who it was, somebody had just not fully, you know,
locked the leg
on one end of the table in place. So it was kind of just waiting to fall down.
We swept the leg is what happened.
I didn't want to do it, too. I kept saying no sensei.
Right.
But and so when I heard that sound, I actually had a kind of worse scenario in my mind, which was that some part of this ceiling above you had collapsed onto mm-hmm. you. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be bad. This is all happening in my mind in you know, less than a half of a second. And I turn around and it's just, nope, the table's collapsed. My backpack's on the floor. There is a massive, like an Exxon Valdez level mm-hmm. coffee spill on this parquet wood floor.
Which is really nice.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah.
I don't know how it does with water damage, but Anyway, it was a disaster. But you were saying,
well, that's it. I mean, I figured we should let the listeners know, and that all happened, and now. During that music, my brain just went to, first of all, what if it had been this table that collapsed, the one that has the majority of the equipment on it?
Yeah.
I mentioned that, like, the only piece of equipment that really fell and really kind of took a hit is this headphone amp, which really looks like something I told you before the
show. It looks like the black box.
Yeah,
like it would
exactly.
be the thing they'd find in the wreckage of the plane crash.
Exactly.
You're really on a mission to tighten down these screws
on the top of the black box,
but can you move them with your fingers?
Yeah, they're moving, but
they don't go down
flush. Yeah,
that's what's bothering you?
No, I'm just messing around. I'm just fidgeting. I like to fidget. Anyway, and also what just happened to you, it was not your fault. And if it had been me that had happened to, it wouldn't have been my fault. But that's the kind of shit that happens to me all the time. Doesn't that seem more like a Walsh move? Just like, for some reason, luck had it.
Bad luck.
I just put my computer on the table and everything went everywhere. And now we're cleaning it up. And you're telling me a million times it's not my fault. And I keep apologizing.
Is this Freaky Tuesday? Did we switch? I get terrified by turkeys. I have a like bum luck with the table.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right. Yeah.
Do you have a powerful lust to gamble right now?
Nora likes me better right now.
Oh, no.
Oh,
now we're getting real.
Now things are getting real. Hey, really quick, let's use that as a moment to promote her live show this Friday in Portland. Can you remember the place off the top of your head?
Yeah, Revolution Hall.
Revolution Hall. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, you can do that if you're in the Portland area. See Nora. Terrible, thanks for asking. And she'll read from her new book. And also, she's going to be joining us on the show this Friday, too, right?
Yes. And then we've actually already recorded that conversation, and what I'm having to remember is that the listeners have not heard it yet, so I have to because that was literally the last thing we did it yesterday afternoon, so
yeah.
It's most fresh in my mind, and so I keep wanting to like make a reference to my comb over or something, but I have to realize in the sort of TBTL time stream, that has not yet occurred for the listeners.
You just ticked off a listener who's like, oh, no, spoiler. Yeah. Now I know that they're going to talk about comb-overs.
I did have a little bit of I think you and I have been felt a little bit burned at times by listeners being kind of upset with us about spoiling things, Andrew, sometimes.
I'm pretty sensitive to spoilers, but I do think sometimes it's over the top, certainly.
Like maybe if it's something that's been out for a long time.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that on the subject of Game of Thrones, because Sunday night when I would normally be watching it, I was on the airplane. And so I got online and because I was like just trying to get a little work done. But I also have this tick of going back to Twitter.
Yeah, right.
Just like I'll do some work and then I'll go to Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll do some work and it's mindless.
Yes.
But I kept seeing things that were like I was worried were kind of giving away Game of Thrones for me. And then even yesterday, because I didn't get to watch – I actually didn't watch it until this morning is when I watched.
Oh, you watched it this morning?
I was too tired last night.
Yeah,
it was 8:15.
Yeah, we got back to the hotel at 8 or something.
I was plum tuckered. Yeah. I went to bed at 8:15 in my shirt. Like,
really?
Like, I didn't – I put on some sweats.
You didn't get a lot of sleep the day before.
I think that was it. So I slept for like 10 hours.
Oh, wow.
Got up. But anyway, I did watch Game of Thrones, and I'm very excited to talk about it. All of this is to say, even yesterday, I kept – so there was so much social media and all the – like I read the Washington Post, I read the New York Times, and they have so much about Game of Thrones on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I really was kind of trying to just avoid this. And a pal of mine, Rachel Martin, who's the Morning Edition host, wrote something on Twitter today. She was like, look, I mean this, you know, honestly and without any malice, but like – can we lay off the spoilers mm-hmm. for like the day after Game of Thrones for all of us who haven't had a chance to mm-hmm. see it? And normally I might be like, Rachel, get a grip. That's not a good look for you. But I was like, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I was really like, I luckily did not have it spoiled. And we'll talk about that later. But that's a real thing.
For a show that is going to be so much in the news, I think like for people to not spoil, I'm happy with like a 2-day grace period.
That's all. I'm not asking for a week. I'm actually kind of proud of us. Proud of us, boy. That's what is that feeling?
Less shame,
less afraid of turkeys, more stability on the folding table. But I think it's a good policy, and I think this was your idea, Andrew, to do our Game of Thrones recap on Tuesday because that day just people need a day. We don't always have like an hour plus on Sunday night that we can dedicate to this thing. I mean, us as people, not just not as podcasters, like me, the listening audience.
And also for me, I like to watch it twice. Like I went back and rewatched it last night, or at least there were some parts that I kind of just like skipped ahead a little bit. I just wanted to remind myself what happened. Like the first time I watched the show, I wanted to wash over me a little bit. Who watches The Washers?
Yeah, great question.
I do.
And so our wash begins.
That's so perfect. Congrats.
Thank you. Maybe
congrats
on that high note, we should try to thank
get
some
set.
People.
Get set. Now ready.
Ready. Go.
Everybody rattle, saddle.
We have to thank, and not only do we have to, we get to thank some dazzling donors. These are extremely generous folks. They're donating a considerable amount of money to the show each month, makes the show possible, and we appreciate it so much. Sarah Hayward of Bainbridge Island, thank you, Sarah. Sarah, part of the 50% contingent of female listeners named Sarah.
Now, I wonder if that includes Sarah without an H, because Sarah Hayward, no H.
I think any Sarah will do. My sister is a Sarah with an H.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sarah, it seems extra to have an H on there, like literally.
I think it's more biblical.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Sarah of Bainbridge Island says, I depend daily on TBTL to keep me smiling, laughing, and yelling, keep it up, dummies! Some weekend days, I'm super bummed out. Some afternoons lately, I'm even sad because y'all are early birds now, so I can get to 3 p.m. and already have listened for the day.
So, well, that's about self-control there, Sarah.
Teeth clench emoji and upset face emoji from Sarah. I love you guys and love the show. Wow, that's amazing. This message heartens me, Sarah, because I do, you know, I have these, I don't have nearly as many kind of intrusive thoughts of regret as you do, Andrew, and I don't mean to laugh when I say that, but like, I do occasionally just get a memory of something I said on the show or some 20 minutes of conversation we had, and I get a real wave of regret, like,
no, me too, man.
I can't believe that was what the show was about that day. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing is what activates it, this is such a strange way to thank the listeners, is for me to go into
Sarah.
A spiral. Thanks, Sarah. Next year, use the money to buy an H for your name.
Whoa.
I
don't know. It just came off.
Sarah can handle it.
Sarah
gets it.
Sarah's been around.
Oddly enough, it's sometimes when people compliment the show, or when we get a nice email from someone. We got a nice email from one of the high bosses at Marketplace, who's kind of a friend of ours and also, like, I guess a colleague, although she's so much further up the food chain than us. I don't think it'd be like saying, Mike Ressler is our colleague.
I mean, yeah, we're getting into car talk territory here. Like, even though... can I just say her name? Is that okay?
Sure, why not?
Even though Deb Clark loses her job and her shit every time we say it, this is American Public Media.
So our friend Deb Clark, who's kind of basically in charge of Marketplace, is a listener to the show. And she sent a nice little email about an episode that we had a while ago. And what's weird is that when we get a compliment, particularly a compliment from somebody else who works maybe in radio or whose opinion I really value, I then just become sometimes consumed with thinking about how uninteresting so much of the show can be at times and how much show we're cranking out. And really, mostly my fear is the repetition of it. In fact, last night, we were out with our friend Steve Nelson, not the dog. And
you talk about El Ropo, the human?
Oh, yeah, that's who I'm talking about.
Okay.
Not the magician.
Okay, gotcha.
Steve Nelson, not the dog, El Ropo, not the magician. And he was, he's a donor to the show. This guy used to be our boss. He's the reason that we're sitting here in Studio P, because he brought us on to American Public Media. And now,
it worked hard to do it, I will say.
Believe you me, I think that was quite a sales pitch. Hire these guys.
That's not a joke. Like, he worked hard to bring us here. Yeah.
And remains a listener and a donor to the show. And like, we were having a nice time hanging out with him. But there's something about him listening to the show and our friend Deb Clark listening to the show, that then I just keep thinking to myself, all I say is the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. Every day on the show is a version of the same thing. It's me just complaining about some petty grievance or talking about my insecurity, which is essentially what I'm doing right now. Or I'd say this would
be hilarious.
Yes, exactly.
Witty
that's
charming.
Literally the next words out of my
attractive.
Mouth.
Attractive.
Right. All of those things.
Thin.
Anyway, so when I get when we get a message like listener Sarah who says not only is listener Sarah enjoying this, but listener Sarah is missing it on the weekends.
Yeah.
That does my heart good, because if anything, I feel like we're making too much show. We are making way too much show and not enough good show. And Sarah's like, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
So thank you, Sarah. You've put some wind back in my sails, and I really appreciate it. Another person putting wind in our sails, and let's be honest, money in our pockets.
Get set. Get set.
Now ready.
Ready.
Go.
Everybody. I want to clarify, not exactly in our pockets. In the coffers of noted 501c3, American Public Media, and then eventually somewhat in our pockets by way of our paychecks. Another person helping do that is Audrey Worthington of beautiful Akron, Ohio.
Akron!
How close to Valley Center is that?
It's, I'm going to say, an hour out, maybe.
Cool.
Yeah.
Audrey says, I'd love to hear from you guys about how you made the decision to get into broadcasting. What drew you to that medium as opposed to others? When did you know it was what you wanted to pursue as a career? Should we try to briefly address that, Andrew? I feel like those... it's Audrey's dime, so I do think we have to answer the question.
I think
that could be a whole show.
Answer the question, Luke. first of all, I consider myself a microcaster, not a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I just want to get the terminology right. Now, well, for me, I went into college not knowing what I wanted to be, but there were two things that seemed kind of attractive to me. One, being a teacher of some sort, like probably an English teacher. And number two, monkeying around with VCRs or something like that. They didn't have a major for monkeying around with VCRs or something like that, but I did find myself taking a couple of broadcast classes, and then that's when my friend Schwa said to me, you know, I work at the public radio station that's just off campus, and this is like, you know, it's not a student station, it's a public radio station, news and information, NPR and classical music. And I had not heard of NPR at that point, but I was like, well, that sounds interesting. I love pushing buttons. As a matter of fact, I remember one time it was the very first, I think.
You've been pushing my buttons for years.
I remember being in a class before I declared my major, and one of them was a broadcast class of some sort, and we had to go around saying, like, why are you here? And I remember saying, like, I haven't figured it out, but I really like pushing buttons and stuff. Like, that's why I'm here. Let's figure this out. So anyway, so I started working at the public radio station through my friend Schwa. And I just also started listening to public radio and just absolutely fell in love with it. And as soon as I kind of darkened the door of WKSU of Kent, Ohio, I don't think I ever went back to thinking about being a teacher. I was pretty much head over heels in love with public radio, and that's what I wanted to do.
I think that's a something you and I kind of have a shared experience with. Like, both of us got to college not knowing anything about public radio's existence, had a public radio station near or at the college, started working there, and were like, kind of had our minds blown. At least for me, it was because all of a sudden, this was just the smartest group of people I'd ever been around. Mm-hmm. Also, the bar was pretty low. Mm-hmm. The previous group I hung out with were the denizens of Gospel Outreach Christian Fellowship.
where more than one
potluck table collapsed, I'm sure.
Under the weight of worship.
Indeed.
Is that a book?
under the weight of worship. I'm sorry. Anyway, Andrew, I just know that experience that you're talking about. It's formative, and it's almost like it imprints on you, like to just have that discovery, that realization at this very kind of important moment of your life, like your early 20s. It's a very strong sort of thing. Do you feel like have you answered listener Audrey's question?
Yeah,
I don't want to cut you off.
I mean, that's what you want to know. How did we make the decision? What drew? When did they know this was what they wanted to pursue as a career? Yep, I think I answered all those questions. Sarah, Audrey, if you have any follow-ups, I'm at andrew@tbtl.net. I'll give you my entire CV.
Or reach out by way of the Kent State WKSU Radio Hall of Fame,
right,
where Andrew is currently enshrined.
Sure.
My experience is not dissimilar to yours, Andrew, as I've already mentioned. I wanted to be some kind of television or movie person, maybe an actor, maybe a TV sportscaster. Mm. I loved sports as a kid, and realized at some point that I was not going to be able to play professional sports. I mean, and that was never even really like, it's not like I was really good and then I blew out my knee. I was, you know, I was making the absolute most you can being 4'11" your sophomore year of high school, you know? So I was very interested in broadcast media. I mean, honestly, I think I just really did have the sort of show off demon. I just wanted people to pay attention to me. And so I think somewhere in the back of my mind, I figured I'll probably try to become either a baseball play-by-play announcer, some kind of sports broadcaster. And then but I also was in college, I was taking acting classes. I thought, well, maybe I'll try to be an actor too. And as it happened, I got this work study job at the radio station at KUOW and had knew nothing about the station, nothing about what their format was, but it paid $7 an hour, which was a lot of money to me in those days. We make like at least $8 an hour now. So, you know, it's inflation for you.
You make $8?
Oh, we are not supposed to discuss our contracts between, like, that's one of the main things HR tells you. Do not discuss your pay.
Especially during the Dazzling Donor segment.
Yeah, it's probably not. That's not good optics.
Day class A.
Audrey and Sarah, I apologize. You now know where that money's going. It's going to the $8 an hour that I'm making, and I assume the $7.50 that Andrew's pulling down. Anyway, I honestly, if I would have gotten an internship, well, I was doing a bunch of internships sort of concurrently. I had one at the sports radio station where I was the morning show intern for Mikey and Vinny in the morning on KJR. My direct supervisor was Jeff the Fisherman Aaron. Everybody was very mean to me at the radio station.
Never had a direct supervisor with it. No, that's not true. I worked for Smokey. That's right. I was going to say I never worked for anybody who had like a commercial radio nickname, but that's not true. I worked for
the Smokey. The Fisherman and Smokey, natural enemies.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry to interrupt you with my.
No, but everybody at the sports radio station was very mean. Like they were just ball busty dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And like it was just the kind of place where it was like it was actually really toxic, I realize now. Thankfully, I guess you could say this is a weird way to look at it. Thankfully, there were not and many other females. And I just say that because it would have been a very bad place to be a female. Now, you could also say that that's a problem in and of itself. There was not equal access there. But it was just kind of a mean place where everybody was just always being mean to each other. And I didn't like that at all. I loved sports radio, but I didn't like that. So I kind of was like, I don't really want to keep doing this.
Is that the same place that you were telling a story about over dinner last night where you were doing the news and you were trying to be funny?
No.
And okay, that's totally
That was different. When I was a traffic reporter.
Oh, right.
So I had this other job in college. Because again, I was desperate to just talk on the radio or talk somewhere or be on something where people were like having to notice me. So I managed to finagle this job. Literally, Robert Smith, now of Planet Money, said to me, "You should apply at Metro Traffic because they'll take anyone." I was like, okay.
That's how I ended up at Kent.
Vote of confidence.
No offense.
So I was a traffic reporter. And then one of the gigs I had was I filled in for somebody doing the news on a country music station in the morning. So they were having their morning show and then they'd bring in this person, in this case me, for a week doing these little news updates. Mm-hmm. And every news update, I just wrote like a 2-minute monologue of jokes. No news content. It was all me just trying to be funny. And then eventually the morning DJ called and said, just do the fucking news. Like called me on the back line,
right,
you know?
Right.
Anyway, so once I just was getting more positive feedback and more opportunity through doing radio. Like I think the barrier to entry is a little lower, you know, it's less fixated on maybe what you look like or other kind of external things. And so I was just able to, there's a little more anonymity in radio. There's more outlets. Like I could call up these shows like Marketplace. God, talk about things coming full circle. I could call up these other radio shows and I could kind of like sell them little news reports and things. They didn't really know who I was. Whereas like the TV version of that would have been, I don't know what the TV version
you can't,
of it.
Yeah, it's hard to free.
Call up ESPN and go like, hey, I'm Luke Burbank. I'm covering the Seattle Rain. Like,
yeah, you don't see a lot of freelance TV stories.
Yeah. So anyway, to answer Audrey's question, I never really thought about it, honestly, like what my career was going to be. I just kept going with whatever the thing was where I was getting paid even mm-hmm. a small amount of money because I needed to make money the whole time. And by the way, not to make this about something kind of unrelated to Audrey's question, but one of the things that I think is a real issue of access, and I speak as a person who, you know, I'm a white straight male, so I'm at the top of the privilege pyramid, but I also was a white straight male that didn't have very much money when I was in, you know, growing up and in college. And there were a lot of opportunities I couldn't take because I didn't pay. Like I couldn't do an internship that didn't pay.
Yeah.
And so, and there's lots of people that have it so much tougher than I had it and are coming at it from a much more marginalized background. Don't get me wrong. But that's a thing that I think we should at some point try to address, because there's just – I just know there's just so many things that there's so many opportunities out there that people cannot afford to take, because you can't work for 20 hours or 40 hours a week and get no money for it, because you need money to help your parents pay their rent, or you need to be able to, you know, pay your rent or pay for your kids or whatever it is. So just – that's a soapbox side issue that nobody asked about.
Can I jump in and also say, please, though, we worked for a station. I remember being so upset about this. We worked for a station where not only did they not pay the interns, you had to do it for college credit. And if you weren't doing it for college credit, then they didn't want to let you kind of learn the ropes, which seemed ridiculous to me, because I'm like, this is just more barriers. This is saying if you cannot afford college, forget it. You cannot ever, like, you do not have to go to college in order to eventually become a board op and then maybe start producing one of the, you know, midday shows or something. Like, there is a path to learning and a career in radio that is that can be very straightforward. But if you tell people you literally cannot get in the door as an intern to work for free unless you're already paying a college somewhere, that's really problematic to me.
I agree. I think that there's just so much the access to the system is much harder than it may just seem on paper, which is mm-hmm. like, yeah, what, you go to college and then you get an internship and then you do it. It's like, yeah, well, how do I pay child support?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or whatever. So I never had a very clear career plan other than I just kept going towards where the positive feedback was mm-hmm. and the slightly positive. Let me just caveat that. Because it was not all – sometimes it was just do the bleeping news.
Mm-hmm.
But the more positive feedback was in the direction of keeping doing the radio stuff. And so that's kind of what I did. But had I gotten better feedback – if I'd had some TV internship where they were – I don't know what they'd be letting me do. But somehow that was working out. I would have probably done that. And even had I had just like one real job that was actually like fun and rewarding – well, a real job, what I mean is like not in broadcast. If I would have like caught on it, I don't know what the company would even be doing, but it's equally possible that I would not even have any job in the media. I would work.
You could have invented Twitter.
Well, possibly. Well, that's the other thing. When did this come up on the show a while ago? The question of like something to do with what would have happened to us if we didn't get into radio.
Did that come up?
Or maybe it was me talking about if somehow I said basically. At some point, I basically said, if I didn't do this, I would either be like the most degenerate person ever,
yeah,
or I would have invented Twitter.
Yeah.
But not even Twitter. I wouldn't have invented Twitter. I would have invented a system for cleaning commercial toilets that would make me the commercial toilet cleaning king of the Northwest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would be, you know, I would be that guy that just got his eighth DUI in Seattle. Have you been reading about him?
No.
Oh, my God. This story. This guy... he's on his eighth DUI, and he's one of the previous ones he got in his Ferrari, I believe, that he like led police on some crazy chase. He's this like local small business guy who's clearly made enough money for himself that he can get flashy cars and stuff. But he's been known to just like walk into bars, buy everyone drinks, buy rounds, get people like clearly he's like a very lonely dude,
yeah,
and has a drinking problem and then has a driving after he drinks problem.
Which is everybody's problem.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You mean becomes a problem for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Is not a problem everyone has.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that I just meant. Yeah, I mean, that's a real problem. I mean, what do you think the cutoff should be? I mean, not to turn this into hot talk. Maybe this
finally
should be a segment in our
we'd like to thank listener Audrey for her donation.
Yes.
Are we still in dazzling donors?
I think so. But like after like five, can't we say no more? After four, like how many DUIs do you have to get before we say, yeah, we can't trust you with a license anymore? Like,
oh,
you
well,
made your choices. Three?
Well, here's the deal. I'm just because we're here and we're talking about it. The deal in the state of Washington is if you get three within a certain period of time, I think it's like three within 10 years,
yeah,
they take your license away
forever.
But he's had like two, and then like on like year 10, month one, yeah, he gets his third. He's somehow they've spaced out in this way where they've never quite. But then the other problem is, you know, taking away someone's license, it only matters if that person obeys the rules of not driving without a license. And so he's been like he's supposed to have an interlock system on his car, like that thing you blow into. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to make some kind of a film about a guy, like a real estate agent who's showing people houses, but he has to blow into one of those when he's taking them to look at the house.
That sounds like such a Mr. Show sketch.
It's based on Dykstra, basically, because Dykstra was a mortgage broker for a while. Dykstra does not have an interlock system, by the way.
Okay.
But it's based on this guy who's like a mortgage broker, but he's had some, you know, he's done some wild, he's trying to get his shit together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's trying to kind of go straight, but he has little, the vestiges mm-hmm. of his past, like people get into the car to go look at a house and he has to blow into the interlock device.
You got
to
get Bob Odenkirk to play that. By the way, I'm charmed. A big group of kids just walked by. I can see just through a window here out to a hallway, kind of a banister, and a big group of kids just walked by. They may be coming in here to listen to some TBTL.
Oh my God. I am so glad that I put up that sign telling them not to come in. So anyway, Audrey,
razzle dazzle.
To answer your question, that's the answer to your question.
What was the question?
The question was, why do we donate to this show? And the answer is because of that. No, really, Audrey and Sarah, thank you so much for supporting TBTL. We would just not be able to do this without you. And I can speak for myself, and Andrew, I would guess you feel the same way. We feel incredibly lucky
yeah.
that this is our job, that this microcasting, that this narrowcasting, it casts to just enough people who donate that this can be a thing. And I'm glad I'm doing this and not the urinal cake king of the mid-Southeast.
You're happy to be the prince. And you know what I will say? And this reminds me, you know, being here is good for us, too, because it really does remind me that we're not just lucky to be able to do this for our job, which we say all the time, but we are lucky. And I truly do believe, if you don't mind me being a little pitchy here, I do believe
pitchy,
that
dog.
The listeners are lucky that we get to work with American Public Media. Like, we are surrounded by so many great people here, not just like people who are creating other great podcasts that we get to be kind of mentioned in the same sentence with, but also a lot of people who are supporting us in a hell of a lot of ways that, like, we don't have to list them all here, but like from meetings that we're having with people who are just like genuinely, like, we work with people whose TBTL is important to them mm-hmm. in a way that I think that maybe you and I dismissed or wouldn't admit for a long time when we were new here, because we thought, like, we're getting away with something. Let's hope nobody pays attention yeah. to us and we'll keep getting away with it. No, like, people are making marketing decks with our stupid cartoon faces on it and talking about the
future. And your real body on my roof.
They
got
right.
a whole presentation yeah. yesterday. I felt very... I'm with you, Andrew. We felt very valued here because we went and we met with some of the folks from marketing, and they had put together a whole deck
yeah.
Of slides, and it was like there was a lot of thought behind it and a lot of intention and strategy for how do we keep this thing going for another 3,000 episodes.
Right, and I do think that, you know— it makes me feel good, but also I see a lot of listener comments. I don't know if you know this, Luke, but when you submit a dazzling donor message, you can also submit a message just to you know, our friend Emily or whoever's kind of behind the scenes, and we don't read that part. And so many of the listeners are like, thank you so much for taking a gamble on TBTL, and
wow.
thank you for supporting these guys. And I just want to let you know that when you're here and you're working with everybody, you realize how much these folks really do care about the future of our show. Mm-hmm. And I feel in really, really good hands. And that means the world to me. And it's the listeners who helped us get here. So thank
yeah.
you.
There are clearly some elements here that are trying to sabotage our tables.
Yeah. Well,
and when we figure out who that is, we will put them on a pike outside of APM.
It was weird. I will say, moments before I walked in here at 8 a.m. this morning, I saw John Moe tiptoeing out of here. I don't know.
Are you kidding?
He had a
me?
Wrench in his hand.
Okay, that's suspect number one.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Real quick, Andrew, I just want to give you an update. I received the following email this morning from the do not reply at state.gov.
I know that guy.
Mm-hmm. We have finished processing your passport. It has been printed. We are sending it to your house. Yeah, boy. Street legal.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now you gotta get our visas.
Can I just say, too, take that, grumpy lady at the Bellingham intake.
What is going? I mean, I don't. I know I got angry last time this came up. How is it this person's job to help people get their you know, documentation? And all she did was make up rules that don't exist, telling you that you can't get it
and attach a post-it note. Player hating.
I just don't get. Like,
that's how strong, by the way, me actually being Luke Burbank is. It was able to override the post-it note saying, please, State Department. Can I just say quickly, major thumbs up, not just because they approved my application for a passport, allowing me and us to go to Australia in a little bit, but the State Department, as it relates to passports, has been amazing throughout this whole process. It started with listener Charles emailing me and saying, look, you should call this phone number and go to a, like, what's called a passport agency, which means they're like actual, like they're allowed to like rule on your passport. They're not just taking the stuff and mailing it off. And I called the phone number that was associated with this agency listener Charles recommended. And I was connected to an extremely helpful person who kind of walked me through it and said, well, you know, I can see that your application has come in. And just keep checking back with us. And I have called that number. It's a contact in my phone. It's called Passport Help. I've been calling it every day. Every day I've gotten a different person who's been equally helpful. And they've been like, yeah, we'll let you know. And like, just like they've been just the greatest. And the State Department emailed me to tell me that the passport's been approved.
I like that. First of all, none of this would have happened under Obama. I want to make that very clear right now.
I mean, it pains me to admit it, but you're absolutely right.
This is the Pompeo era.
Absolutely.
And
things have always gone great in places called Pompeo. I guess it's technically Pompeii,
I'm there with you. I knew what you meant.
Thanks for playing along.
But yeah, you know, sometimes with some apps now, you order you order food. Let's say you order a pizza, and then they'll get really personal and be like, Mike, just put your pizza in the oven. Have you ever gotten those messages?
Maybe not about pizza, but I know what you're talking about.
It's like, it'll be very specific. Yes. It'll be like, you know, Kevin just took your pizza out and it's on its way. And
Rick just stole one pepperoni off your pizza because he's super hungry and didn't think anyone would notice. Really, Rick?
Come on, Rick.
Come on, Rick.
But I like the way that the State Department is kind of, doing the same thing. Just like, you know,
They were like hyper communicative.
Yeah.
And every time I called, I just got somebody. It wasn't like calling some – and Grant, I mean, I assume that the State Department, they've hired a bunch of phone folks, and they're probably not – I assume they're not in D.C. They're probably somewhere in the Midwest, the land of call centers. Maybe they're even somewhere around here. And clearly these people are there to just sort of field questions, and they're not allowed to give legal advice, and there's a bunch of stuff around it like that. But they were just all like kind of – they knew what they were talking about. They were pleasant. It didn't feel like I was calling some – to use your reference, Andrew, some Brazil-esque bureaucracy of a Kafka redundancy where you're just like every interaction I had with the State Department, as soon as I got above the level of Whatcom County clerk, everybody I dealt with was just amazing.
The tyranny of the petty. Is that an expression?
Maybe it should be. Anyway, so I guess good news, bad news, Andrew. Good news, we can go to Australia. Yeah. Bad news, you will now be killed by a cassowary.
That's great. I just want to mention that I had a really good experience also dealing with, I can't remember, it's not the Department of State, not the Department of Homeland, whatever it is for Australia, because I didn't know what our visa situation was going to be. And I tried calling the embassy on the West Coast, which is in Los Angeles.
Doesn't that kind of feel cool to call the Australian embassy?
Yes.
Like, you kind of feel like you're a player and you crush a lot. I called the one in Chicago, and I was just like, I am a very important person who calls embassies.
And you know what the cool thing is we don't need to be planning a trip to call an embassy. Their numbers are public. We can call any embassy we want, just see how it's going. What's happening over there?
I'm amazed that we can call an embassy.
Yeah. Do you have anybody who is not cleaning out litter boxes and skateboarding all over your embassy? If so,
Argentinian embassy, is your refrigerator running? What if our new show was just prank calling embassies?
Oh my god! That I can't wait to see the
Norwegian
slide deck
embassy
about that. From
do you
marketing.
Have Prince Albert in a can? No, he's doing well actually. He's still the monarch in charge.
Hi, do you have 12? Do you have 12-pound balls? We're not a bowling alley, Andrew. Stop calling here.
Hey, speaking of bowling alleys, quickly, we are going to be at Ran Ham.
Oh yeah,
tonight. It looks like
what's happening with that?
Well, right when we get done recording this, and right after we talk to our friend Eric the Viking about various equipment things for Australia, and then right after we do a few other things, I am going to – I'll make the rounds. I'll get a few things worked out and
– make some deals, handshake deals.
I keep losing at deals, though, Andrew. That's the thing. I'm going to make a few handshake deals and get everything cleared up. Basically, what happened was we went to Ranham last night, the bowling alley, where we're going to have the get-together, and we learned that it's going to be a fairly active night tonight. There are a few other groups coming before us and after us, and so it just became necessary that we reserve some lanes. So I want to see – more than 10 and less than 60 smiling faces tonight. What we basically found out is hopefully we'll get, I don't know, I think about 30 would be the perfect number of people.
So everybody get together and count.
Yep. The first 30 who sign up get to come and everybody else, sorry. No. I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll have 10 people. It's hard to know. But I guess what I'm trying to say. It may be a little crowded down there in Ranham. If you get there, if it is crowded, just try to, you know, as they like to say on local news, when there's traffic problems, pack your patience. You may be waiting a little while for a beer. Also, happy to report they've got a fine selection of non-alcoholic beers. They've got some O'Doul's, if that's your speed.
Yeah, but anyway, hot dogs. I ate two of them.
Delicious. They've got too many nachos.
Oh, yeah.
I ordered nachos. Like, they brought enough nachos for an army of the dead. It was well, like,
what have you been watching today?
I don't know. It was like just a weird, a lot of Bruce Campbell, a lot of Bruce Campbell. So I guess what I'm trying to say is tonight, 7 o'clock, Ranham Bowling Alley. We've got some lanes rented between 7 and 9. I don't know if you all are going to get to bowl or not. I imagine you don't care that much about the bowling. We will be socializing. It may be a little tight down there. Everybody be nice to the staff of Ranham.
Be very nice.
Because if you're mean to them, they will be mad at us because we kind of like brought potentially a wonderful but large number of people into their small bowling alley.
Don't make Lawrence holler at me.
That's right.
I don't want to be hollered at.
Lawrence is a very agreeable sort, and we want to keep it that way.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the plan for tonight. A little Minnesota noise news here, Andrew. DJ Stan Turner, most recently of KLBBAM in nearby Stillwater, Minnesota, will be resurrecting his All Request and Dedication show from a local men's shop called Jaime's Haberdashery in the Ham Building right here in downtown St. Paul. The story is that Stan Turner was doing this very beloved show for years and had met Anthony Andler, who's the proprietary of Jaime's Haberdashery. And he basically talked Anthony Andler into being an advertiser on this All Request and Dedication show, which my sense of it, just reading this article, is that he just played a totally eclectic variety of music. People would call in. They would request a song. Did you see the list of songs that were played on the last show?
I might have skimmed over that part.
It's let's see. I've got it right here. Here's part of the playlist from one of Turner's last Request and Dedication shows on KLBB. Country star Terry Gibbs, Chuck Berry, novelty songs, Motown, some Johnny Mathis, local chanteuse Sharon Lemieux, and Guy Marks singing Loving You Has Made Me Bananas. Those are just a sample of the songs that were being played on All Request and Dedication. Anyway, when the show finally, when the radio station, as we learned from Steve Nelson, not the dog, El Ropo, not the magician, last night.
It's good to have quick little nicknames for people.
That's it. It's just, it's really about just keeping the conversation moving, Andrew. I think if you've learned one thing from me here, it's that. Basically, this radio station in Stillwater, the land that it was on, we have heard from Steve Nelson, was apparently worth more than the AM frequency of the radio station sitting upon it.
So they didn't sell the frequency. The frequency just went dead.
Yes.
And they sold the land to somebody who's...
Meaning it's available for us, I think.
I think so.
Snap that up for a song.
Would you indulge me for a second? When you type in Stan Turner radio into YouTube, you find a bunch of videos that are supposedly his final show. Can we just take a...
Yeah.
Let's see what this one... This is 4 hours long, so I'm a little worried.
KLBB. Right now, it's 38.
Well, howdy-doody, kids. And what time is it, kids?
Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Okay, I love this.
Oh, wow. This is a better version of TBTL.
the final show from March 30th, 2018.
Well, those Wolfies are in good voice. Good howl, aren't they? That's a good omen. Wow. Good afternoon, everybody. Folks, just right off the top here, I want you to know this is not a funeral. This is not a wake. It's a celebration. It's a celebration is what this is all about today. A celebration of gratitude to you and a celebration of hope.
If he thanks a dazzling donor, I am going to shit my pants.
Far down the road.
This is good, dude. This is totally my style of radio.
Playing this is the best decision we've ever made in our life. I wasn't sure, like, how will it start? Will it start rough? Will it be in the middle of, like,
the last
song?
Pause it. Can you call Toppers? Pizza and get the outgoing message. Wait, is that the guy? Does he do it? Is Stan Turner the guy that does the Topper's outgoing messages?
He might.
That is amazing.
That's cool.
That is so for us, right?
Yes.
That kind of radio. Well, here's the thing. The radio station sadly went away, but this friendship between Stan Turner and Anthony Andler of Jaime's Haberdashery continued. And it sounds like Anthony was such a fan of the radio show and wanted to continue that as he has expanded his operation down there, he decided to build a radio station with a little kind of live performance area. And so eventually, I mean, it's going to take a little while to sort of do the work, but eventually this radio show is going to rise again from the haberdashery, and they're going to do live shows. And I think it's going to be on the internet at first, but then a charming line in the article is how they're in negotiations with a low-power FM station.
Right.
And I wondered, I feel like if you're a low-power FM station, you get a chance to have this show. You should do it. You should snap it up. I don't know who's driving a hard bargain in this scenario, but I definitely think that this show is an asset to any radio station that'll take it.
Yes, and at the very, very – what is the final line of the article? I haven't read this in a couple of days now, but I believe the very final line of the article is, we are hoping to start including more radio shows in our lineup. Am I right about that?
Do you think they would take terrible thanks for asking?
That's what I'm just telling you, once we get Nora off this network,
yes,
we'll be king of the hill.
You know who the last person to sit at this table was last night?
Yeah, oh, you're right. Sitting at the place where the legs went
Nora McInerney, sitting where the structural issue with the table started today. You're spinning your computer around, Andrew, trying to show me something.
I don't know if you can see it from there, but I'm at the haberdashery website, and it's like the building itself is exactly...
Oh, my God.
It's a corner storefront.
I think it's called the Ham Building, and it's obviously...
Okay.
A kind of a real important. By the way, can I just mention?
Beautiful.
I love the architecture of St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yes, the Midwest is the best.
It's hard for me to explain because, one, I don't have good terminology for architecture, but it's like we don't have that in the Northwest. There's some beautiful stuff in the Northwest, don't get me wrong, but there's just, like I was mentioning it last night when we were driving with Steve Nelson. Past that big what used to be a Schmidt bottling processing place that's now kind of a bunch of other things. Just the architecture in the Midwest, I just love it. It's so cool to me.
The brick buildings with the faded signs that used to be painted directly on the brick.
Yes.
They're still there, like ghost signs. I love it.
Well, you know how I want this to end, Andrew, this show? And I think that we're...
I assumed murder-suicide.
Well, I mean, yes. I want you to go... Like, can we do... We'll do enough Mice and Men thing. And I'll just ask you to tell me about the bunnies again, and you take me out. I would like at some point in my career to just basically be, and you're not going to get this reference because I guess you didn't watch the show, but I want to be John Corbin in, or is it Corbett? I want to be the radio host from Northern Exposure.
Right, yeah. I mean, I know of Northern Exposure. I know he's a radio host. And I mean, I remember seeing, and he was in a storefront window too, right?
And really, I mean, it's a genius expositional device for the TV show because you basically have – you just have this very convenient way to just get any kind of plot out that you need or reflection upon what's happened. You have this sort of slightly omniscient radio host voice.
Now, how well do they do – have you gone back and watched that show since you've worked in radio? Because how well do they do the small things that drive me crazy? Like, I'm thinking of Gross Point Blank right now.
Uh-huh.
And if people have seen that, Minnie Driver, who plays the DJ, and she's – again, if you're in a radio studio in a movie, there's a 90% chance you are in a storefront where people can see you from the street. And at one point – she is getting into an argument with
John Cusack. He's back in town. And supposedly the whole thing is broadcast over the airwaves, but they're like not, they're ignoring the microphones.
Right.
He's walking around. Like, it just makes no, and it drives me crazy. Seeing just the radio fundamentals that would not happen in real life drive me nuts.
Oh, man. Andrew, you made a great call with playing All Requests and Dedication. I'm about to make a bad call with playing.
Ooh, I'm excited.
This, I guess the show was called, oh no, wait a minute, you know what? No, I don't think I want to do this. I saw what I thought was a video of the, you know, Chris in the Morning, I believe, was the name of the show that that the actor sort of did on Northern Exposure. But this is called something on YouTube called Phil in the Morning Episode 1, and then it says parenthetically Northern Exposure Chris in the Morning Tribute.
Oh,
which makes me think it's somebody doing their version of this guy doing his show on this fictionalized TV program. And for once in my life, I'm going to make the right call and say, let's not do that. Point is, the idea of doing our show from a haberdashery or from a storefront, I'm going to be in Marfa, Texas this weekend. Mm-hmm. The Marfa, Texas public radio station is, as far as I'm concerned, the most charming public radio station. I've only seen it from the outside, but you saw it, Andrew. It's just unbelievably cute.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
I thought they sounded good on the inside. So, like, I would love that so much. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a living in it for us. Although, I don't know. Is there a living in us doing the show in Studio P as school children stream past?
Right.
I mean, is this lower profile or is this higher profile somehow than doing it from a haberdashery?
Right. I don't know. Can I also share back to the haberdashery story?
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously the type of things that people say when they know they're being folksy and it's a good pull quote. But I do love this quote from this article from the Pioneer Press about this whole thing. Talking to the guy, what's his name again? The guy who runs the haberdashery. Do you remember? I don't have his name in front of me right now.
Anthony Andler, I think.
Okay. And he's talking about growing up. I listened and watched my grandpa in conversations.
Oh, yeah. This is great.
Both loud and subtle as he navigated his way through business every day. He'd say, if you treat people like you do your zipper, it will last a lifetime. Soft and gentle. Don't pull too hard. Treat people like you treat your zipper.
That is the sage advice. Yeah, this guy, Anthony Andler, is like right out of Central Casting for being kind of like a tailor, a haberdasher, a men's sort of clothing expert. He's got like a very natty like vest on and a tie. And of course, he has like one of that measuring tape that you use whenever you're doing like a hem or you're like doing any kind of sewing.
Mm-hmm.
He's got it around his neck, sort of looped jauntily.
Yep.
Like you just assume, like I bet if we went down the street right now to this place and walked in, he would be there with that thing around his neck.
He probably sleeps with it on.
Yeah. Maybe that could be my new move. I tried to start a new move the other day, Andrew, that I really want to try to stick with it this summer. Actually, I'm going to do it for Australia. Don't judge me. My nephew Daniel's birthday party, he was turning one, it was Western themed. And, well, my goodness gracious, look who just wandered in. One Corey Schreppel.
Is he going to sweeten our show for us today?
Oh, that would be awesome. My nephew Daniel's birthday party was Western themed. And when we showed up, they gave everyone like a bandana. And I did that thing where you kind of roll the bandana up and then you tie it in a little knot.
Yeah.
You wear it around your neck.
Yeah.
Think Sam Neill in Jurassic Park. Or think Sam Neill now, where he is living his best life. Have you followed, you know the actor Sam Neill?
Yeah, he was in, well, you just said Jurassic Park. Yeah. I mean, that's all I know him from.
Have you seen him? He's on like Twitter. He's got like a pig farm that he lives on.
Oh, really?
And it's a vineyard. And all he does is drink what I assume is an appropriate amount of wine and play with his animals and tweet about it. And it is, I want to go to there.
Oh, yeah, that sounds
good. But anyway, I am going to try. It's so affected because I am not a cowboy, but I like the look.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm going to try it in Australia. Are you going to be embarrassed to see me in Australia with my like little bandana tied around my neck as we drive through the outback?
You know, this is a negative answer. But it's the truth. I think that I embraced to basically be embarrassed in Australia already. Like, I was thinking about that the other day. I don't know why. Just like,
I'm going to take that as a positive answer.
Okay, yeah. Just like,
you're ready for it.
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, you know, we're going to seem very much like fish out of water there. And we're going to get a lot of looks from people when we're trying to buy equipment or when we're in the rental car. And if they catch wind about what our plans are at the, you know, rental car place or whatever, I think that people are going to be looking at us like, you guys from Seattle are going to die. Don't do it.
Do you?
You
but don't you think that my accent will help us blend in?
Well, that and I think the bandana around your neck. So that'll be good. Yeah. It'll be like, look at my bandana.
You
I'm
cool
ready for
that
this trip.
A judgmental stare? Rise up lights.
Nailed it.
One other quick story here from our Minnesota Noise segment. This story has so much to it, actually, Andrew. I saw the headline this morning, and I was like, okay, whatever. But then you delve into the story, and it's actually so charming. Mm-hmm. St. Paul's a grumpy old men house is on the market for the first time in 72 years. In the Phelan Lake neighborhood here in St. Paul, there is this kind of stately old house, and it was featured in the movie Grumpy Old Men. Now, it's not actually a house they lived in. Apparently, it was the house that the kind of, I guess you could say, to some degree, love interest. By the way, Phelan Heights. I guess it is a view of Lake Phelan. That's what happens when I try to freelance and shoot from the hip on Twin Cities neighborhoods. I'm bound to fail on that. But the house was not where Walter Matthau or Jack Lemmon's characters live. It was actually where Angie Dickinson?
I didn't think it was her, but for some reason my article is all blurred out. Maybe I've looked at too many articles.
The Pioneer Press.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the Anne Margaret, excuse me.
There it is, yes.
So the Anne Margaret's character, who these grumpy old men are kind of sweet on in a certain way, this is her house.
Mm-hmm.
And it apparently sits up on a kind of a hill, looks down a bit on the rest of the neighborhood and out on this lake. And what's sort of interesting about the story behind it is that it was owned by a guy named John Halfin II. And it turns out that when the filmmakers saw this house and decided this house on Hyacinth Avenue, that they wanted it to be, you know, a big kind of location for the film, they went to this guy, John Halfin II, and said, "We'd like to make a movie at your house." And he said, "Absolutely no way." This is according to his son, by the way, who's the one actually selling the house now. Like, the dad had been through a lot. He'd fought in the war. He had a sister who dealt with mental illness. And he had kind of withdrawn, really, from sort of public life, if you will. His sister had mental illness. This is all according to the article.
I think it might have been his daughter. I think it was the sister of the guy who's telling the story. The kid is telling the story, third. So I could be wrong. My article's blurred out. But, he had a daughter who I believe dealt with mental illness, and then I believe she passed away too. And I think after she died, he and his wife just never wanted to leave the house. And that's the saddest part of the story, of course.
The filmmakers kept coming back to him and saying, like, can we please shoot our movie at your house? And he kept saying no, because he didn't want people there, because he had become this kind of a bit inward private person.
A grumpy old man, you might
say.
He
literally had become a grumpy old man. And then they just kept upping the offer. And he ended up, by the way, I think he was a retired postal worker, which is just kind of great that, like, I like an era of time in this country where you could just work like a real job like that and buy a house and raise your family in it in a city that you love, presumably that he loved. Like, those days are over.
Probably had a pension.
Yeah, right. I mean, what a time to be alive. Anyway, they finally came back to him and made an offer that he agreed to. And it involved them paying, I think it was, how much was it? $12,000 in cash. He got new siding on the house. Yeah. He got new roofing. And he got shutters. That was for the first movie. And then when they came back and wanted to make Grumpier Old Men, he knew he had them over a barrel, because this is where Anne Margaret lives.
Exactly.
$24,000.
Yeah, it doubles it. I feel like he could have gotten more. This is Hollywood.
A Hollyweird, more like it, because, by the way, the house is now on the market for, wait for it, $249,000?
And a lot of that is because of course, its place in cinema history now.
I guess, but it's like, this is a very beautiful house.
Yeah.
And apparently with a view of a lake and all this history, and with all of, and being in the movie, all of those factors driving it up to $249,000, which depending on where you live, maybe we have some folks that live in other parts of the country where that's a lot for a house, but compared to somewhere like Seattle,
yeah,
I mean, that's pretty reasonable.
And the son who's selling the house now, the adult son, says that his dad had a bunch of hidey holes all over the place where he hid cash and he hid a pistol, I think, in one of them.
Which has not been found.
Yet he went back to all the hidey holes that he knows of and they're all empty, he says, which is interesting. Like, I wonder at what point the old man realized that he was, you know, he wasn't going to have any more time left to empty those if he didn't do it on that day. That must be a very, I don't know, sad thing when you realize I better empty out these hidey holes now, because if I wait too long, I won't have the ability to do it. And then somebody else is going to find the stuff that I hid.
Well, I think it was his son might have, or I don't know if it was the dad or the son, but somebody got to what I thought was the most interesting little thing hidden, which was a coffee can full of, I think, money buried in the dirt under linoleum in the basement.
But I thought that was gone when the son went to look for it, no?
I don't know.
Anyway, yeah. So yeah, he had stuff hidden all over the
place. And by the way, the gun has not been found.
I know.
So that's, I mean, a reason enough to buy the house.
It could be in there. Could be in there. Free gun. $250,000 gun.
That's one of the house. I mean, that's one of the things they tell you when in real estate, fresh baked cookie smell. Mm-hmm. And tell the people about the free gun.
Three things. Location,
free
guns.
Gun. That would actually be a good show title.
Good thing we don't have a delay.
Now,
we'll do that perfectly
what,
in person.
You know what's kind of a sort of sweet, I guess, ending to the story, and hopefully it's, you know, not just apocryphal, but what it sounds like was that the dad, the grumpy old man that he had become, and, you know, tough life that he had actually sort of come to really enjoy the filming happening at the house. Like, he ended up spending,
I didn't remember this part.
Yeah, it says in the article that the dad during the filming of the first, you know, the, I guess, both of the films, ended up spending a lot of time hanging out with the actors and the crew and
on the porch, right?
And his wife, this part has, I mean, maybe, who knows, maybe he really was about to make time with Anne Margaret. It says in the article, to the chagrin of his wife, he had taken an especial shine to Anne Margaret.
I love it.
Which is just like, which is kind of great. Like, this, you could imagine this guy just being kind of one of those classic sort of World War II era people who just, they're just, you know, they're doing what they're supposed to do. They're taking care of their family and their responsibilities. They're working their job at the post office. They don't want anyone bothering them. They don't want to bother anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of one way that you figure your life's going to go. Again, having been through a lot, he'd sort of withdrawn a little bit. And then you get this Hollywood crew come up, which could have just ended so badly. Just, you know, and he ends up, according to this story, befriending the casting crew, having a crush on Anne Margaret.
Mm.
Like, this is probably one of the highlights of the guy's life.
Yeah, yeah. At one point, I believe they attached a bunch of balloons to the house.
It was
the whole
just
house went up.
So, by the way, the balloons are not included.
Oh, okay.
In the $249,000. Yeah, exactly. Do we have time to do an email or Vmail, or do we need to wrap this bad boy up?
You know what? I have some, but I think we have to wrap this bad boy up because we have a meeting. I need to recharge the batteries on this recorder before we get into Game of Thrones talk, and that sounds good. But I have, unless you had designs on a special song today, I believe I have Words by Doves ready.
Oh, good.
To go.
I was going to suggest that.
Yeah,
it's one
less
thing for us to discuss. It's all about streamlining the show, Andrew.
That's right. Can I just point out, when we were hanging out with Steve Nelson, not the dog, El Ropo, not the magician, yesterday,
okay,
we were in his...
Speaking of streamlining.
Yeah, we were in his 2007 minivan for all of, I don't know, 45 seconds before he started busting our balls about TBTL. He works, I don't think I'm talking out of school here. Of course, he works on It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders. And we asked
Among
about,
other shows.
Among other
He's
shows.
He's a big mover and shaker down there at the NPR factory.
And we asked, oh, yeah, how's that show going? He's like, great. You know, I just edited Friday's show. And I said, oh, well, what is that
edit can mean different things, right? There's audio editing. There's like editing as in like taking a segment from the beginning all the way to the end. And I just said, oh, what kind of editing? What does that mean? He said, well, you know, Andrew, there are some shows we work on that deal with facts, and those shows need editors. It's like, geez, Louise,
I know.
Boss.
Yeah. Open the sliding door on this minivan. I'm going to do a controlled roll.
After that, he calmed down. Everything was nice.
Yeah, well, take that, Steve. We're turning this show in at 1 hour and 23 minutes. And I think we've done some good work. Hey, I got a show title for you. Avoid the Toid.
All right. I forgot about that.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see between 15 and not more than 33 of you tonight at the bowling alley. For the rest of you, I hope you have a great Tuesday. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, go Mariners, go St. Paul Saints, go eat a bagel, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.